You're listening to the Food Talk Show on produced by Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Hello, Paul. Tripped over your words already. We haven't even started.
It's been a long day. Been a long day.
I've been reading the news today, and obviously the big news is Mary's out.
Yeah.
Mary has left the big, you know, the Bake Offy thing. I sort of knew she would. I had a feeling that she might. Paul's not, though. Paul's going for the money, isn't he? Old Mr. Hollywood, he's going for the big bucks.
Yeah, and funnily enough, I read an article in the Daily Telegraph about it today, saying that that's probably the worst thing that could possibly happen to Channel 4.
That's hilarious. They paid all that money and nobody's coming along with the show, really.
What their thesis was, though, that if Paul Hollywood had not gone as well, they would actually be in better shape. Because what they could do is start again and do their own format. But because they've still got him involved, they're kind of stuck with a format where most of it's gone.
So it's going to be really difficult for them, though. I mean, if you look at Top Gear, you know, even if you get really, really experienced broadcasters like Chris Evans, it's really hard to replace personalities that people have actually come to love. You know, they feel they're friends with them almost.
And Chris made the same mistake that a lot of people did. He tried to just reproduce Top Gear, and you can't. You have to completely redesign it from the bottom up.
Yeah.
And they will have to do the same with Great British Bake Off.
Or from your soggy bottom up.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to admit, I have never, ever watched a single episode.
Oh, how can you say that? Mary Berry is like, the news this morning was more important than any other news, obviously, this week. It's so important. You don't understand. She's 81. It's really important.
10 million viewers, I know. But I'm not a television watcher anyway. I've never watched Game of Thrones either. And I have never seen a single episode. Mind you, that's not the only thing I've never watched. I've never watched
anything.
I've never watched Dancing in the Jungle or any of the others.
Coronation Street? No.
I'm in Coronation Street.
You're in it?
I'm in it, apparently.
Are you?
In two ways.
Do you want to look for that?
Where are you in it?
You
know, somebody stopped me in the street a couple of months ago and asked for my autograph.
You're not that cat, are you?
No. And I said, yeah, who do you think I am? And they went, you're that bloke, someone's uncle in Coronation Street, aren't you?
I don't know, you don't look like Norris to me. Perhaps they were talking about him.
I've no idea.
Who that is? Well, it's not a compliment, Paul, trust me.
I'm sure. Let me tell you, though, you're going to love this. I actually delivered a seminar from the Bar of the Rover's Return to the British Cement Association.
British Cement Association. Lovely. In Manchester, presumably.
Yeah, it was literally on the set of the Rover's Return in the Manchester studios. Yeah.
Nothing to do with Mary Berry, though, is it?
No, that's true.
And I do think it's interesting because the you know, when you buy a programme, if you think about this in terms of business, what is it that you're buying? Is it that you buy the format and the brand, or are you buying the presenters as well?
Yeah.
And actually, when people sell businesses, it's the same. If you build your business around a personality, what is it that somebody's buying? Are they buying the business, or are they buying that person and the brand around it? And it's quite difficult to value that.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. And I think a lot of media lawyers are going to be looking at this.
Yeah.
What have you bought?
What have you bought?
If you're going to buy this, presumably you should tie in the whole format.
Exactly.
If it's dependent, as you quite rightly said about Top Gear, it's a lot of it's based around its presenters. GBBO was based around its presenters. Mm. So if you're going to buy something, you ought to have got them tied into that. Otherwise, what have you bought?
Well, I presume they're buying the intellectual property, but that means they're only buying the intellectual property of the format and the logo and the name. But what about the presenters?
Yeah.
Because you've got to admit, Paul Hollywood, I think, is going to really struggle.
Yeah.
Because first of all, a lot of public opinion would be against him because you're just going to go, well, he's a money grabber.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not with his mum. He always calls her his surrogate mum, and you know, all that's sort of broken down, hasn't it? All that sort of camaraderie and stuff.
Absolutely.
Anyway, there's other things in the news this week. It wasn't just that, which obviously is the biggest news ever. There's some news out from Camera. And you know they're the sort of campaign for Real Ale.
Sure.
Everybody sort of classifies them as people with beards and woolly jumpers, which I'm sure they're not.
But and that's just the ladies.
Yes, very funny. They've done a little bit of a campaign at the moment because they're saying that there's fish in beer.
I beg your pardon?
Fish in all beer. And if you're vegetarian or vegan, you shouldn't really be drinking it because it's got fish in it. Did you know that?
Hold on. Hold on. Because
I
don't drink beer. There is fish in beer. Well, like goldfish or whatever.
No, it's not goldfish. You don't get people's... No, it's not goldfish. So basically, you would think the classic ingredients of beer were hops, malt, barley, water, maybe a bit of yeast. Mm. But actually, the swim bladder of fish is on the list.
The swim bladder of fish.
Yeah, icing glass. It's a very old-fashioned, traditional... ingredient, and it's a gelatin, and basically it's a gelatin that's made using the bladder of fish.
Wow.
And that is very, very, very likely to be in your average pint, and they've been using it since the 19th century, and basically it makes the beer sort of clearer and brighter, and it's odourless, this stuff. But I'm afraid that if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, you probably shouldn't be drinking
beer. You can't drink
beer. No. That's not funny.
Yes,
it's serious.
That's hilarious.
No, it is serious. It is serious.
No, I think that's funny.
No. So Camera are saying that people should label their beers to let them know whether icing glass is in there or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you're a vegetarian or vegan and you were just on your way to the pub.
You shouldn't, no.
Don't. You've got to turn around and go back. You've got to drink water. Water with a carrot in it.
Indeed.
That's what you got. Yeah.
I'm going to carry on now because there's a bit of Schadenfreude going on there.
Yeah.
This is our last show in terms of the speciality and fine food fair, which we had a great time. And normally we'd only do two shows, but there's been so.
There were some great people we met.
Fantastic. So these are interviews with Christy and Brady, who were there on the final day. And the first set we've got is a sweet potato spirit company. So Gary from there talking about sweet potatoes and that he's making rum and moonshine and all sorts of stuff. My favourite, though, is Tony Goodman from 10 Acre. They do flavoured crisps. He's such an amazing guy. He just turned up on our pop-up radio show and he just poured huge bags of crisps just on the desk. Crisps and popcorn. Then there's... crunchy flavoured crickets, which we've seen quite a bit of recently. Mm. And then we'll do some more later. But should we start off with that Sweet Potato Spirit Company?
Yeah, let's have a listen to this.
So it's the last day of the Speciality and Fine Food Fair at Olympia London. And I'm here for the Food Talk Show with my colleague and friend Brady.
Hello.
And we have got yet more alcohol that's come our way. I think that people are going to think we planned this, Brady, aren't they?
Definitely. We didn't, amazingly.
So we've got Gary, who's from the Sweet Potato Spirit Company. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
Thank you very much for coming over, and you've brought a lovely selection of your spirits with you. Do you want to talk us through a little bit about what you do and about the products you brought along?
Yes, indeed. We are the Sweet Potato Spirit Company, and we make a range of spirits and liqueurs using sweet potato as the base for our alcohol. And they're all crafted from scratch, so we don't buy in any neutral spirits and then flavour them. We make them from scratch here in the UK.
Absolutely brilliant. That's what I'd like to hear, don't you, Brady? Something that's made here, and it means you can really support local, which is a big thing at the moment. So rather naughtily, before we started, Gary gave us a little try of some of them, mainly because Brady will be driving later. I'm not, so I can crack on. So do you want to have a try of something else, Brady, or do you want to, how do you want to do it?
Why don't we try a little bit of the gin together? Because neither of us have tried the gin. So
no. So we've got a lovely long bottle there, which is quite a slim bottle. Looks quite classy, doesn't it, Brady?
I love the packaging of this one. I think it's slightly different shape bottle for a gin, isn't it?
Yeah, they're kind of more stumpy normally, but it looks like all of your bottles in the brand are of the same. Is there a reason for that?
Because it's a striking bottle, and we looked at lots of different bottles. We wanted to create an identity that was very obviously ours, rather than trying to emulate somebody else. And that was the bottle that we came up with.
I've just tried the gin, and I'm a huge gin fan, as I know is Brady, and it's lovely. Yeah, it's got a really nice heady aroma when you smell it.
It's really fragrant as well, and that's the thing. I think it really, really comes off it. It just, the smell of it, when you smell it, when you bring it to your mouth, you just can't wait to drink it because the smell's fantastic.
It's a nice good quality tonic, and a slice of lime would be great in that.
It would indeed. And we've got, obviously, it's a London Dry style gin. So it is juniper led, but we don't overdo it on the juniper. And we've got things in there that that you will see frequently. And we've also got things in there that they're a little bit different and out of the ordinary. So you might have picked up notes of coriander in there. There's star anise and lavender amongst other botanicals. So it's a very distinctive mix and one that's obviously our own. And you also get an element of the creaminess that comes through, which is what one of the characteristics of using sweet potato as the basis for your alcohol.
So that kind of leads quite nicely onto my next question, Gary. Where did it all start from, the using sweet potato as a basis?
Okay, that's a really interesting question, and there's quite a straightforward answer. We're growers. So we grow our sweet potatoes in North Carolina in the US because they don't like our soil and climatic conditions here. So they're very difficult, if not nigh on impossible, to grow commercially here. And whilst on a visit to the farm a number of years ago, I was in a typical Deep South breakfast eatery. And the waitress came to the table to take our order, and she said to my colleague from the farm, tell me, I know you can make spirits from potatoes, can you make them from sweet potatoes? And in his usual sort of inimitable style, he rocked back on his chair and said, well, hell no, I don't know. And as a spirit enthusiast, I just thought, well, I wonder if we can. And that was the start of a 3.5 year development of what you now see in front of you, and it's been a very exciting journey.
I can see that. So did you say that did you put this one's got an award?
Yes, we've won a number of awards for the spirits, which we're very gratified by, because we're such a new brand, but we feel that the awards are great third-party endorsement, which then provide a great sales aid for our retailers. But we've won medals at three different World Spirit competitions, and we also won the World Food Innovation Award for Best New Artisan Beverage for the range.
Oh, congratulations. So the one that you've got an award for that you've brought along here is the Sweet Potato Spice Rum, which Brady tried before we went on air, because her nickname is The Pirate. She loves a bit of rum. And what did you think of that one?
It's exceptional. And one thing that I just love is the colour of it. I just think that's what will really, really set it apart. And it looks so pretty. Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on a full bottle of that and enjoy the whole bottle when I'm not driving.
Good answer. So where can we buy these from?
Okay, they're available in specialist retailers, so farm shops, delis, specialist wine and spirit retailers. We're rolling them out to the on-trade now. We've had very good uptake with that, so expect to see them in your local bar sometime soon. And they're also available through some of the big online retailers like Master of Malt, for example, and Drink Supermarket.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for coming to see us, and I wish you the best of luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'll make sure that the full bottle wings its way to you soon.
Thank you very much. I have with me here Brady, who's presenting with me today, and Tony Goodman, who is CEO of 10 Acre Snacks. Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
And Tony just turned up to our stand a moment ago for his slot, and he brought with him two enormous bags of his lovely snacks and just emptied them on the desk in front of us, which was actually a bit like being in heaven, wasn't it, Brady?
Yeah, I've always wanted to be in front of a mountain of popcorn and crisps. I can't wait.
So, Tony, tell us a little bit about 10 Acre and what you do there.
When you've eaten all of these, you'll understand everything. 10 Acre is a brand of crisps and popcorn where everything we do is free from plus. It's gluten-free, dairy-free, MSG-free, GMO-free, and vegan. So we meet all the dietary requirements, but the most important thing about them are they're fantastic flavours. So whether it's ready salted, which has just won a Great Taste Award, or some of our more unusual and unique flavours like pastrami and rye, sweet and sour, Bombay spice. You're relishing opening that pack, aren't you? It's time you opened a pack and started tucking in.
I think we should. Brady, open up the first pack. So Brady's got a lovely red packet of crisps there, and it says pastrami in the rye. And I was just told us a moment ago that every packet has a story title on it, and the stories are all available on the website. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. We believe in storytelling, and it's a great part of the fun that we try to bring to what is still a premium snack.
Okay, Brady's got a mouthful of crisp. Brady?
I don't know if I can talk because I'm smiling so much. I can't believe they're vegan, Tony. It's amazing. It's just so tasty and,
really meaty tasting, aren't they, the pastrami ones? Lovely. Interesting flavours. You know, I'm a bit boring with crisps, so I stick to salt and vinegar. That's my favourite. Okay, Tony's opening another one. We've got The Day Sweet and Sour Became Friends, and that flavour is sweet and sour. There we go.
I don't think I've ever seen a sweet and sour crisp before.
No, you have. So, just have a little bite of this. Mmm.
Really, again, lots and lots of flavour. And, just really crunchy. I just absolutely love them. I love crisps, and these are very special.
So, Tony, you started this company a couple of years ago now, wasn't it? 2014, did you say?
That's right. We did our official launch at the end of March 2014. And we've had a great reception from the public. We're managing to get the products all over the country, broadening distribution all the time. So hopefully you can find them somewhere near you. But we've also brought some new flavours. So we now have a range of 10 flavours of crisps and 7 flavours of popcorn. You need to try the popcorn next, don't you?
What, for pudding? Oh, cappuccino popcorn. So with them being... What was the phrase that you used? Super... No, about...
Free from plus.
Free from plus.
That is great tasting plus all the free from characteristics.
It makes them accessible to absolutely everybody. So we've seen on the show since we've started, even you know in that relatively small amount of time, that people are much more conscious of what they're eating, but also dietary requirements for medical reasons are being diagnosed a bit more frequently, I would say.
They are, and it's not just for medical reasons, it's also from choice. A lot of people, nearly half the households in the country, now buy free from products on a regular basis. And why, if you're going to have a product, shouldn't you have the best possible tasting experience? Snacks are for fun. You know, they're not a staple of the diet. They're for fun, and we want to bring a smile to people's faces when we do. And when you open that pack, just smell the aroma before you even taste them.
Okay. I'm going to smell this pack now.
Certainly fun coming over to the table and emptying out this array of... that smells like a bit like a chocolate liqueur, doesn't it? It smells lovely. I'm going to have a try now. So I'll pass you over to Brady.
The flavour of this is brilliant. I think one thing with a lot of people buy flavour popcorn now, but quite often the flavour doesn't tend to sort of sit on the popcorn. Did you have to do anything particular to get it to do that?
That's right. And we work very hard on making sure that the flavour goes throughout and that the texture is right, because you want something that's a pleasing experience.
Yeah, and there's something about popcorn, isn't there? It's so fun, like you say. The fun fact. I don't think next time I go to the cinema, I don't want to get the rubbish popcorn. I want one of these.
Strawberry and cream popcorn I've got here. And it is just like strawberries and cream, like a bit like the sweeties, strawberry and cream sweeties. Have a try. So how many flavours do you have, Tony?
We've got 10 flavours of crisps and 7 flavours of popcorn, including flavours like strawberry and cream, cappuccino, fennel and lemon, wasabi... and in the crisps, we've got the pastrami that you try, the sweet and sour, chicken soup, Bombay spice, hickory barbecue, as well as the staples of ready salted, salt and vinegar, cheese and onion, black pepper, sweet chilli. So we cover all the staples that are popular with everyone, as well as some great things to have fun with. And these are genuine share snacks, because everyone can eat them. So whatever your friend's dietary requirements, you know that you've got something that will suit everyone.
Absolutely. And with all of those flavours, you can't really go wrong. There's not going to be anybody that can't find one single snack that suits them, both for kind of being free from, or, you know, just for a different flavour. So Tony, well, he wants us to try one more before we go, which is wasabi. I'm going to go for the wasabi. So whilst you're opening that, you said you're available online. You're also available through lots of different producers. Do you want to just give us a little shout out to where people, our listeners, can get these products?
We are available through a few online suppliers, including Amazon and Holland & Barrett. Holland & Barrett also, you can collect in store in a number of their stores. And we're in good retailers throughout the country, including places like Selfridges and Fortnum & Mason, Whole Food Markets, as well as delis and farm shops and corner shops and bars and cafes across the country.
Taking on a storm. I've just tried the wasabi and they are spicy. Good for if you've got a cold. I like them. Nice.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Definitely a fantastic flavour hit with those.
Tony, we need an hour special to get through all of these crisps and popcorn snacks, but thank you ever so much for coming to talk to us today, and the best of luck.
It was a great pleasure, and thank you for the fun interview.
No problem. We've got a very interesting guest next, haven't we, Brady?
Yes, I'm scared.
Oh, she's scared of everything. We've got Harry Harrison, who is co-founder of Mothergy. Hello, Harry.
Hello. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to see you. So, Harry, tell us a bit about what you do, please.
Myself and a colleague have set up a company called Mothergy, and we're all about incredible edible insects. And so we supply insect ingredients, supplements and snacks into the UK and the rest of Europe, both from a distributor's point of view and also direct to consumer.
Brilliant. So, insects, why?
So there's two main reasons. The first is nutrition. So they're incredibly high in nutrition, very high in protein. Crickets can be up to 69-70% protein. But they're also very high in other micronutrients, so vitamins, minerals, omega-3, which is incredibly good for people with active lifestyles. They help, obviously, with muscle repair and building, but they also help with circulatory issues. They help with the heart, the minerals that are in these crickets. So that's the first reason. The second reason is sustainability. They are extremely good for the environment. As our climate continues to change and the world population continues to grow, there are going to be food source shortages, and it's going to affect certain parts of the world more than others. And what we're here to do is show that there are more sustainable ways of finding food, good quality food, and really lead by example.
Brilliant. So you started this company in, did you say, the beginning of the year?
Beginning of the year, yes.
Okay. I'm still, how did you ever get into distributing crickets and cricket powder?
It all started last year. My co-founder was actually watching a program on the sustainability of farming crickets, or putting insect protein more generally into our food chain. And that got us thinking, how can we help drive this agenda? We're both into our food, both into our kind of sports and nutrition. And when we started looking into the profiles of these foods, we were completely blown away. As I mentioned before, they are extremely high in protein and micronutrients, but they also are very kind on the environment. They produce almost no CO2 emissions, and they take very, very little water, feed and land in order to grow. So they take very little from the environment, but give us so very, very much.
Brilliant. Well, I don't know about you, Brady, but I'm absolutely dying to have a try. So there's different flavours. They're in kind of a brown paper bag packaging. Looks very health foody, if that makes any sense. And I've got a couple of flavours in front of me. So we've got honey mustard?
Honey mustard, yeah, which that is a fantastic flavour combination. So I can't wait to try that. And then there's barbecue season, which is very of the moment, isn't it? Barbecue.
Barbecue?
Yes.
Mm, yeah, like barbecue, especially in the summer. And then, yeah, okay. And then we've got some squares, which Harry said he's been a bit kinder to us by bringing some squares, which I presume are made out of the cricket powder.
So these are protein bites. So they're made out of pecans, peanuts, and cocoa powder, as well as obviously the cricket protein powder. So I would advise you try these first, because you'll realise that actually the background taste is very, very nice. But these are high in protein, extremely healthy for you, full of good oils.
Come on, Brady, give it a go. Right, so she's got the tiniest little square and she's just putting it in her mouth. What do you think, Brady? Nice. Chocolatey, aren't they?
I want to know what I can taste, you know, all the flavours I'm used to tasting, but
it's a nutty taste, I think. Is it? Am I right, Harry? Yeah.
So what we've done here is obviously complement the kind of mellow nuttiness of the crickets with other nut flavours, and this is just so people can kind of get used to it and actually realise that there's not going to be any overpowering, horrible taste to the actual crickets themselves. And as I said before, the cricket powder can be used effectively as a protein powder. It's a nutrient powder, as you would use spirulina, or you would use, you would use whey or soy protein powder. And this is just to show how easy and versatile it is to adopt this kind of protein into your diet.
Great. Come then, get the crickets out. Oh, here they are, Brady. Right, I'm going to go in and have one. So they just look like little dried crickets. And they're just crunchy. What is that, the barbecue ones? The honey?
That was the honey mustard.
Mm. They're really nice. Yeah, I could just sit and eat a handful of those. Brady, come on. She's being a bit of a baby about it. Come on.
Just close your eyes. It's all in just, the mind.
She chose one without legs.
I love the flavour of it.
Have another one then.
Okay.
Oh, she is as well. One with legs this time. They're really nice. There's nothing wrong with them,
and
is there?
The texture of it is just really, really crunchy. And
yeah,
it's
like nuts.
Yeah.
Like having
it's
a bowl
really
of nuts.
Nutty. I hadn't realised that was the actual sort of overriding flavour of it. So yeah.
So what if I told you these are half the fat and twice the protein of peanuts? So as a, you know, even just as a bar snack, you know, they're going to be better for you than eating your peanuts. Maybe get another beer instead, you know.
That
definitely.
Sounds like a
plan. Should we get a nice beer?
Can we try the other flavour? Have you got any of the other flavour with you? Open. Oh, don't open any for us.
No, these ones are already open.
Oh, great. Yeah, I think they're fine. We'll get the guys to try some in a minute. Oh, look at that one. That's a big one, isn't it? Should we have that one? Come on, you. Barbecue. You like barbecue crisps,
don't
you? As well.
I like that. That's lovely. Talking about protein drinks and things like that, will you ever make something that has, you know, these protein drinks that people... I mean, I don't, obviously, but people at the gym, they're forever drinking these, you know, like you said, all these whey protein powders.
The powder's used, isn't it? And that's like the purpose behind these kind of bars as an energy protein builder.
Absolutely. So our main business is actually supplying a lot of small producers and very big producers, actually, with the actual powder itself, so that they can go on and develop their own products. That's not something that we're currently looking into ourselves. However, the way that I incorporate this into my diet is through smoothies in the morning, through adding them to porridge or granola in the morning. It's a really, really easy and tasty way of doing so. And if people want to try it, that's why we've created the brand that we have here. So if they go to morphogy.com, they can actually order the samples that you've had here today in as small as 50 gram, all the way up to 150 gram bags. So they can see that actually it's not as scary and it's very, very tasty, healthy for you, and they can try that themselves at home.
Absolutely perfect. So just say your website again one more time for us, Harry.
So that's morphogy.com,
spelled
morphagy.com.
absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for coming over and educating us on crickets. Have a great rest of the show.
I'm a convert.
Bye.
Thank you very much, ladies. Cheers.
She says she's a convert, but she's been into work every day since then. I've not seen her eat crickets for breakfast. It's funny, that, isn't it?
It is funny.
Yeah.
Do you know?
The porridge has been out, cornflakes, bit of toast. Crickets, no.
Do you know, it's funny because I wasn't at any of those interviews and I want to talk to you about them in a minute. But on the cricket thing, I think it's an absolute waste to put cricket powder on cereal or porridge. I actually really do like crickets.
Mm.
No, seriously, I
know
do.
You think they're nice and crunchy, don't you? You quite
well,
like
it's
them.
Not only that. They taste of nuts. They taste like roasted crickets taste like nuts. And in fact, a lot of the commercial cricket production goes towards making cake ingredients and things like that for people with nut allergies because it tastes like nuts. I do actually eat nuts. Eat crickets. The first time I ever tried them was on a radio show and somebody put a bowl of them in front of me.
I think you've said this already, Paul, and you stole all of them, didn't you?
And I ate all of them.
That's because they're incredible edible.
Yeah, they're lovely. So I like it. Yeah. But I also, the sweet potato spirit is not for me because I don't drink, but I miss the crisps as well.
I know. Well, and Tony Goodman's such good fun, so it's a real shame. And he's got some very, very unique flavours there. And I didn't get to taste the pastrami in the rye flavour, which I quite like that.
Mm, that sounds nice.
Mm. Mm. They didn't bring any back.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah, typical. Mm. So we got a few more interviews. We got some jam, with Pierre, with some sort of, you know, I think quite a lot of producers are really trying to cut the sugar out of quite a few products, and it's quite difficult. So that's very good. But he's got very interesting flavours, Pierre. Mm. So he'll do things like apricot and rosemary, cherry and cardamom.
Right.
And again, I think we're seeing quite a lot of trends of people adding really nice herbs and things to traditional flavours, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Then Black Cow Vodka. Now, when we said there was going to be this guy...
Hold on.
He's making vodka out of milk. So I'm thinking, no, that sounds... It's going to be white and cloudy. It sounds disgusting. It's won all these taste awards. Apparently, it's really brilliant. Can you imagine that? Black Cow Vodka.
It says here, Black Cow Vodka and cheese.
He makes cheese and he makes vodka. Now, that sounds stupid, but because when he makes cheese, you separate the curds from the whey.
Yeah.
The whey is obviously is a liquid.
Yeah, yeah.
And instead of throwing that away, what he's been doing is using it, which is good because he's cutting down on waste. So he's using that liquid to actually make vodka. And
really?
It's the world's only pure milk vodka.
It sounds horrible.
Yeah, but what people are saying is it's clear. It's not cloudy or milky.
Oh, right, so it doesn't look like milk.
No, it's clear. Right. But it has a slightly creamy flavour to it. No, I know that sounds disgusting. Both Christy and Brady said it was fab. They said it was really, really good.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Well, I guess we need to listen and find out.
Yeah.
And what else have we got?
So we had that, so that's really good. I wanted to try some of that, but they didn't bring any of that back either. And the really great thing is it makes a very mean espresso martini.
Wow.
Well, you can imagine, you don't know what that is, do you? But basically, that's like in cocktail at the moment.
All right.
Which is really great. So if you're going to make espresso martini, you should make it with Black Cow vodka. And we've also got some very impressive looking meringues coming up.
Big meringues, eh?
Yeah, very big meringues. Yeah. So would you like to hear a little bit more from them and then we can probably carry on about Mary because it's, you know, I'm devastated.
Really?
Mm.
Are you?
Mm.
Why are you devastated?
Mary Berry. I'm devastated. Go on, get on with the London Jam Company and Black Cow Vodka.
Yeah, should we do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hear that.
So I'm here at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair 2016 at Olympia in London with the lovely Brady.
Hello.
And we have got next up on the Food Talk Show, Pierre, who is from the London Jam Factory. Hello, Pierre.
Hello.
So Pierre's brought along some rather interesting, wouldn't you say, Brady?
Yeah, I absolutely love the packaging of this. I just think it's something I'd want in my kitchen.
So he's brought along a selection of jams that he makes. So, tell us a little bit about what you do.
So I'm producing jams with since 2 years now and with a bit of an angle because the jam market is quite saturated right now. So we produce jam with half of the amount of sugar, so the fruit content is extremely high. And the other angle that we found is we always mix the fruit with either some herbs, some essence, some flowers, some alcohol sometimes, just to make it a bit more interesting and to make it attractive to other consumers.
Okay. So with reducing the amount of sugar that you put in them, was that quite difficult to do? And was it also something that you set out to do from the start when you began the venture?
Yes, we, I mean, I love jam, but I've found it quite horrific to see how much sugar there was. And I thought, like, let's try to find something, you know, to methods to add less sugar. And we found it, and this is why we cook our jam in a copper pan, because that's very critical to make it work. And we cook over different over 2 or 3 days, so just to make sure that the pectin activates a bit more. And it works. So this is, you know, this is what we found, and this is clearly a market now, because I mean sugar intake is a concern for a lot of people.
I mean the sugar, it's a huge area at the moment that people are talking about, isn't it? How much sugar is in foods with the sugar tax that they're going to be introducing and the mandate that they've prepared the government. So you started this off in 2014, is that right?
Yes, exactly. 2 years ago, it's a bit of a birthday for me. So that was my first fair that I've did. 2 years ago, and we went to that market without knowing much about it, and didn't really know that we could find a niche for us, and it seems we are. So it's we're still quite positive about it.
Really good. And my next question was kind of based around that. Do you have a background in doing this kind of thing? What is your background, Pierre?
No, I had a very corporate life before. I was an MD of a big corporate company before. I mean, I was always interested in food. I'm a food addict and love to cook. And if you would see my kitchen, I mean, it's a bit of a crazy kitchen. But I love the jam. And my mother actually gave me a copper pan because she moved from a big house to a smaller one. So she didn't have enough space. So she gave that copper pan, and I thought, oh my god, now I need to do some jam. So this is how it started, and I found that the way to reduce the sugar, and then I mix it with interesting combination of flavors, and then here we go, you know, 2 years later we've got a company who is working fairly well, and it's still improving and progressing. So
absolutely brilliant. So Brady's just opened up the first pot.
The smell, Pierre, of this, as soon as you open it, it just smells like jam should and doesn't very often, because so many people buy mass-produced jams. And I don't think there's a household in Britain that doesn't have a jar of jam in their cupboard. So why should not make it something as delicious smelling as this? Can I try some, please?
Of course you
can. I'm really excited about this.
So Brady's trying the apricot, and is that lavender?
Lavender, yes. It's a trip to Provence.
Lovely.
You know, it's the apricots are coming from the south part of France, where they produce great apricot, Bergeron, and I mix that with a bit of lavender essence, which is quite nice as well. And for me, every time that I open it, I really find me, oh my god, this is the smell of Provence, you know. So I always travel with those jams. Yeah.
Oh, the taste of the apricots in there, it's that natural sweetness. It doesn't taste too sickly sweet.
And the other thing I really like about it is the set.
Yeah.
And actually, this is quite typical in France.
Yeah.
You know, to have this kind of, it's not a set jam. It's exactly as it should. It should drip a little bit,
yeah,
shouldn't it? You know, and I think it's fantastic. It would be amazing in a cake, like a Victoria sponge or something like that, all dripping down
really
the side.
Nice.
It's absolutely lovely. I love the colour. It looks so authentic.
Let's try this, the other one.
Brilliant.
You open it up.
The raspberry and geranium is very an interesting flavors, because geranium is an extremely difficult flower to work with. I mean, it's actually not the flower; it's the leaves that are infused, and they are. And I worked a lot on that just to find it the right balance. And I think with strawberry, with raspberry, I find it quite well.
Mm, that is lovely. Geraniums, you're right, do have a really strong smell, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And I guess that goes over into their flavour.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you just say that you used the leaves in the end?
Yes, it's the leaves of the geranium. Where I mean, the flower doesn't smell anything, but the leaves have got a bit of a citrus feel. And it really gives a nice little touch.
I love in the mango and passion fruit, which one that I've just tried, how you've managed to retain the texture of the fruit still in there.
Yes.
Because mango and passion fruit are quite fibrous, aren't they? So,
yeah.
And you've still been able to keep that, which is quite must have been quite difficult to do.
I mean, the key thing is to get extremely good quality product. You always think that, you know, that all the overripe fruit are perfect for jam, and actually the opposite. So you need to very good quality product, but also not overripe, actually quite underripe, because then you get the flavor, you get less sugar, and it's much more interesting. So this is what we are doing it. And I also work on the texture just to make sure there is a bit sometimes, or, you know, full fruit sometimes. I mean, I do vary with all my different flavor that I do.
Absolutely lovely. I enjoyed every single one of those, and I guess you've got a couple of other flavors as well that you're working on and that you sell.
Yes, I mean, we've developed 70 different flavors. Wow. So that's quite a lot. More than a couple. This is the key thing. I mean, it goes to vary from kiwi and mint, for instance, to very weird, like peach and bay leaves, for instance. Like, so the range is extremely interesting, and also, that's the whole idea. When you go to your supermarket and try to find, when you look at the tea and the coffee stand, you know, you've got a massive range. And when you go to the jam, I mean, except, you know, the typical apricot, raspberry and strawberry and sometimes plums, you know, there is nothing much apart from that. And this is why, I mean, we try to really push those products out, because then you get a good range, and we create it's quite interesting. So
and fun.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love it. I mean, I always say that I never regret my previous life, you know, where I earned much, much more, but I didn't have that much fun. So,
So where do you get them from? I guess you can get them online through your website.
Yes, so thelondonjamfactory.com. We do also have lots of other delis and coffee shops around London and in the UK. Source Market being one of them, and others, and through distributors as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming along and letting us try your lovely jams. Have a brilliant rest of the show.
Thank you.
We have two lovely guests who've just come along, and they've brought not only what looks suspiciously like vodka, but they've also brought some cheese. So already they've got a big gold star next to their names in my book. I'm also here with Brady.
Hello.
So we've got Harry, who's the brand ambassador, and Jason, who is the co-founder of Black Cow. Hello, guys.
Hi, nice to meet you. Hello.
Hiya.
Who's going to tell us a little bit about what it is that you've been doing and what it is that you do?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think Jason can take you through the story of where it came from, and then I'll take you through a bit of the production process. So,
great, Jason, over to you, sounds like.
Right, okay. So it's vodka made entirely from milk, and vodka's normally made from wheat or potatoes. So what we do, feed that to the cows, come higher up the food chain, and then you're making it completely out of milk, and the raw material is that much cleaner. So what we do is we make the cheese, where so I sell my milk to my cousins, where they don't give me enough money for it. So make the cheese, and then we spin the whey that comes out, and the butter flies to the side. And then we sieve out the baby powder, and then the lactose, which is left, the very clean sugars, that gets brewed into a beer and then distilled. What else? It makes a very mean espresso martini.
Does anyone else make milk, vodka from milk?
No, we are the only ones in the world. It's completely unique. It's from Dorset. It's British. And dairy farmers seem to be at war with Russia at the moment, as they keep on burying all our cheese. So why not hit Mac with a bit of vodka? And it's good vodka. We just made it's got a gold medal in San Francisco, the Spirits Awards. We're in M&S. It's good vodka.
Well, after that introduction, I think it'd be a little bit rude not to have a little try of it, don't you, Brady?
Definitely.
So whole milk makes for an exceptionally smooth vodka. So in Dorset, they're well known for growing luscious grass. So when you're grazing your cows on this grass, you get a really exceptional milk. So we're starting with the Gold Top of Milk, so that's sort of our name references that. So if you give it a little go, you'll find that a lot of the creaminess from this really high quality milk carries through in the vodka making process. So you get a really creamy mouthfeel to the vodka. It's very creamy, very smooth. We say that you can drink it till the cows come home. So if we give it a little taste.
So do we just down it, or do you want us to sip it? Sip.
We can down it later.
Okay.
I have to say, a lot of vodka, I know people do drink vodka straight, but it wouldn't be my normal drink of choice to drink vodka straight, but that you could, really, you can drink it like that. It's absolutely fantastic.
It is, no, it is very smooth, very smooth.
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who will come to us and they'll say, well, I never used to drink vodka, or I had a bad experience with vodka when I was 15 and now I can't drink it. But yeah, it's one of those things where if you're not a vodka drinker, do give it a go, because it's incredibly nice. You're enjoying it over ice with the cheese, and I'd never normally drink vodka neat, but it really is very smooth. It's delicious.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine myself drinking this with some ice. I do like a gin and tonic. I don't normally drink vodka, but that is really, really smooth. And you're so right, Harry, with what you were saying about that smoothness coming through, and that must be from, you know, the sauce, mustn't it? You know, with what I'm used to. So the cheese as well, that's yours, isn't it?
Yes. Jason can take you through that, because he's actually part of the Barber family and they're very well known for the cheese making, so he can talk to you about the cheese side a bit. That'd be
his cheese has come from my milk, where I said they don't pay me enough for it. So basically that is a vintage cheddar. That's at the Good Food Show years ago, at about 2012, was the world champion at 4 years old, but that's only 15 months old, that one. And it's in a truck.
So where do we get the Black Cow vodka from? Is it just available through your website, or is it?
So we are available in, well, first of all, loads of local farm shops. I mean, it really does sell well. We really hit the sort of artisan sort of, we're a local product, so people really love to get involved and support us. I mean, when you're drinking something and eating something coming from the same milk, we call it the whole milk when you're drinking the vodka, because you get all of our milk. We're no waste, you know. We really do appeal to, like, health conscious, environmentally conscious. I mean, the vodka actually comes out lactose free and gluten free, even though it's made with milk. So it actually has less lactose in it than some leading brands, because they add lactose sugar to give it the creamy feel. This is 100% natural. I mean, so we're available in lots of farm shops. We're available through M&S. We're available in Sainsbury's. You can get us next day delivery on Amazon if you want. We're really all over the place, and in many, many bars as well. So we really do. We have a big market in the on trade and on the off trade. So.
Absolutely brilliant. I absolutely love it, don't you?
And it will be so easy for you to spot it in the shops, because their branding is fantastic too. I think that's really special. And definitely go and look at the website. Maybe we can just get a reminder of the website.
So you can find us on www.blackcow.co.uk. And mentioning the branding, actually, so Jason is the farmer. So his family are the cheesemakers, and he will produce the vodka. And his partner Archie and his wife, they head up the creative team. So they basically took care and created the brand image and everything. So it's all done in house, you know. Jason essentially dumps the vodka on Archie and Helen, and then they do the rest. So yeah, he's very good at making vodka and cheese, and it's his niche. Yeah, exactly. Very, very, very good. Yeah, and it is delicious.
It really is. I can definitely agree with it. I love the branding. I said to you before we went on air, the video that you have on your website is just mesmerising. Everybody should definitely check that out. Thanks very much, Jason and Harry.
Very welcome.
Thank you.
So we're nearing the end of the day, at the final day of the speciality and Fine Food Fair 2016 at London Olympia for the Food Talk Show. And our next guest is the lovely Leanne, and she is from Flour and White, and she's bought some pretty impressive looking meringues, hasn't she, Brodie?
I think it's fair to say I've never seen such impressive looking meringues. They are amazing.
Hi, Leanne.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've been doing and about your company, about Flour and White?
We started a company called the Little Ryan Cake Company 7 years ago. Sorry about the voice, by the way. It's been a busy show. And we launched in farmers markets and kind of agricultural shows around the country. We were selling cakes, beautiful cupcakes and handmade pastries, all sorts of beautiful products. And we launched meringues 4 years ago onto those stands, kind of market stands, if you like. Meringues have taken on a life of their own and have overtaken the rest of the business. We now sell into Selfridges, farm shops, delis around the country, and we still continue to stay true to our ethics, which is making everything by hand, all natural and local ingredients where we can, and it's a real labour of love. We've 26 staff, and most of it is because of the production side of the business.
Lovely. Well, you can tell that it's labour of love because they look absolutely spectacular, don't they? They look like amazing. They're huge. They look. Oh, I just want one.
I just think they're one of those things where you pick it up and you just smile. You must see people smiling at your product all the time, and that must be so gratifying after all the work you've gone through all the years.
When I first started being face-to-face with the customer, they would come to the stalls and literally we'd got this, wow, that's amazing. And I've worked in retail for years but never had this kind of reaction. And it makes you feel so positive about what you're doing because we do put so much pride into what we do and so much passion. Work very, very hard to try and achieve a consistent look in what we do, but also the quality every single time. Nothing worse than trying a product once and you go back and try it again and it's not the same as how it was. We use a Swiss recipe as well, so we're slightly different to every other meringue producer out there. I don't know many people that make meringues like this. Everyone laughs and says, where's that girl with her giant meringues? But yes, exactly. But we heat the sugar to 100 degrees and then we add that to the egg white. We then put the natural flavour through and the colour after it's been mixed, and we scoop massive big dollops of the meringue onto trays and slow bake it for 3 hours. It stays soft in the centre and it's got a really crisp shell. You should try one, really.
I think that after that introduction, it'd be rude not to, don't you, Brady? We've got some little ones here with little sparkly gold glittery ones, haven't we?
So pretty, really pretty. What flavour is this one, Leah?
Strawberry.
Okay, I'm going to go for it.
Go on then. That's a look of happiness I can see on Brady's face on that meringue. What do you think? Yeah, what a great job.
Amazing. Really tastes like real strawberry, which I presume it is. It's so lovely. And the texture of it, it's melting in the mouth. But it's not, you were saying about traditional meringues, it's not kind of nothing. It's not an air of nothing. It definitely is some substance to it, which is quite unusual.
It's not a chalky meringue. It's much softer, and that comes from the free range egg that we use, and we're actually using the methods that you'd use in your kitchen at home, on a very big scale.
Scale than me at home with my bowl. Going back to where you began, really, I imagine that's been quite an immense journey from selling it, I guess, in bags face-to-face to someone, to packaging it in this lovely packaging and sell-by-dates and getting it into big stores and everything. Do you just want to quickly tell us about that?
It was a real journey. We knew that if we wanted to sell meringues, that we would absolutely have to manage the fragility. So we had to have bespoke packaging designed, and it didn't happen first time. It was third, fourth attempt of trialing and getting it right. We're all self-funded, so you're hand to mouth with things. So whilst you might want to develop something, you can't because the money's not there. So you have to sell and just keep plugging away. And it has taken us a long time to get to this point. It was one of our distributors that said, you need to put this in a box and start selling it in that way. And we always worried that you would lose the impact, which is why we had the window so you can see the product. And there's always lots of problems with different things that you just don't expect. Being able to produce when you get a big order in and making sure that you don't let people down. So it's been many nights in the bakery with the children trying to get out orders, you know, so that it's been a real challenge.
It looks like you're there, though, to be honest now. The packaging's amazing. I mean, that look of shot, both myself and Brady, when you brought it over, we're like, wow, they are absolutely huge, and look how amazing they look. And they really do. So, you know, well done. It was worth it in the end, I guess. So whereabouts? We can buy them from Selfridges and from lots of independent retailers. Can we get them online at all?
We sell through QVC, and next year we'll be launching e-commerce. And again, this is one of the learnings. We did do online, and we decided to stop until we got it absolutely right. So we'll be relaunching the website next year in April, and with that you'll be able to buy them direct from us. We've nailed the distribution side of it now, thankfully.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us, and have a great rest of the show. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye.
Wow, there's some interesting stuff there.
It is, isn't it, Paul? And I think Leanne's really pointing out the fact that distribution's everything, and there's so many lessons to learn along the way, isn't there?
Sure,
you
absolutely.
You know, just making a great tasting product just is not enough. There's so much else involved.
Absolutely. It's all about the business at the end of the day.
And you get something difficult like those huge meringues, which looked lovely. I saw them at the show. They look stunning. But how do you package those? How do you get them to the place at the other end? They're all smashed to bits.
Yeah, they end up as a pile of dust in a bag. Absolutely.
But every product's got its particular problems. I mean, the great thing with meringues is they last a long time. Obviously, you've got some products that have got a really short shelf life. So how do you cope with that? And you've really got to go through quite a lot before you've, as she said before, I've nailed it.
Yeah.
It takes quite a lot of trial and error.
I mean, what's the shelf life of milk vodka? Does that become milk yogurt very quickly?
No, there's no milky stuff in it. You've got the wrong idea. It's completely see-through.
Yeah.
But again, alcohol, of course, is an ambient product, and it's going to be there for ages. So, you know, you've always got these particular problems to overcome. Mm. So I think the most successful people we've seen are people who've got some really friendly ambassadors of retail ambassadors who will give you great feedback and will trial your product for you, and I think that's probably, you know, the best way to go in the first instance.
Absolutely. Or you've got to do things. If you remember, we had the lovely folks from Toast Beer a few months ago, and they were talking about how they were expanding their distribution network with a product that was quite hard to distribute as well. So it is about kind of spreading your network, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. So a really interesting week. So don't drink beer if you're a vegan or vegetarian right at this point in time. Go and get it checked out.
It's got fish in it.
Well, most beers have. So I think Cameron's right, really. If you are making decisions about being vegan or vegetarian, it is right that it should be shown on the
packaging. Labeled, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So get behind that if you're a vegan or vegetarian, because it's absolutely right. You should know what you're drinking. The saga of Bake Off this week, and the interesting thing for me is what are you buying and what are you selling?
Absolutely,
paying £10 million more than you know the BBC was prepared to pay, but what were they buying?
Absolutely.
I know you're a businessman. You wouldn't have just forked out £25 million and not signed them all up.
It's really dodgy, that, isn't it? And with service businesses, we talk about, you know, buying goodwill and buying things like that. But it's about the content, so you've got to think about that. You really have.
But you haven't even watched it, Paul. So you have to watch it next week. It's very, very exciting. You can't get anything more exciting and more tense. It's more exciting than any
watching
thriller.
Bread rise.
No, than somebody taking something out of the oven and it could fall off at any point. I mean, I'm exhausted after watching that program.
That's my daily life, that is. Something can fall off at any minute.
But it's exhausting, and the tension is amazing. And the one thing I really like about Bake Off is I don't know whether they're making up, but they genuinely seem to want each other to do well. It doesn't seem bitchy, although behind the scenes, who knows? But it does seem quite good.
The best television is always that frisson, that banter, that interaction between the presenters, isn't it? That's what makes a show or breaks a show, really.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Mary Berry tells Paul Hollywood off a lot. So when he dunked his Jaffa cake in a cup of tea, she just said, "We don't do that down south." Well, I mean, that's just a brilliant line, and true, of course. And now all of that's not going to be there. It's all going to go away. So watch it next week, Paul, because I'm going to be testing you and asking questions.
I'll watch it just for you, Sue, just
Thank
so
you
I
so
can
much.
Comment on it. Yeah, good.
Okay, well, a great programme, and looking forward to next week.
Yeah, so thank you very much for listening to the Food Talk Show. Produced by Channel Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back at the same time, 4 o'clock, next Thursday.
Thursday.
For the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Have a great week.
Goodbye now.
Bye-bye.